Welcome to the last BIM Heroes podcast episode of the day here at BIM Coordinator Summit 2023. In this final session, we're going to be going back and talking a little bit about planning and how the BIM execution plan is created. Hello, gentlemen. Last podcast of the day. Yep. We'll start off by introducing you guys. And go ahead, Pavlov. We'll get introductions from you. We got some Guinness coming in here. The last of the day.
Let's get the most important thing.
There it is. First,
yeah. Cheers.
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 Here's to a great conference. Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Pose for the photo. Okay, my name's Clive. I'm the one of the co-founders at Planoly, and yeah, I'm happy to be here.
Awesome. Brian Skripek, with the Design Build Institute of America, and I have the role of Director of Virtual Design and Construction there.
So let's dive a little bit into both of what your groups actually do, and we'll start with Brian. Discuss what the Design Build in America, what that's all about, and what's its goal.
Yeah, so DBIA, the Design Build Institute of America, is a professional membership-based organization, but we're a little bit different than AIA, which is focused on the practice of architecture, or AGC, which is focused on the Association of General Contractors. We're focused on defining the best practices and the development of Design Build as a project delivery model. So we really have the unique perspective of having a very diverse membership and audience, from architects to engineers to builders to fabricators to installers, owners, academics. So really taking this wide angle perspective look at how do we communicate, collaborate better to drive efficiency and project delivery. So me coming out of the architectural side, which is where my background was, implementing these tools on projects, being able to come in and then, be a lead to say, how do these design and construction technologies even further enhance project delivery to drive value for owners?
And Clive, on your perspective, how is Planoly helping with the BIM execution and the plan and how that comes together?
We focus on making it simple and a little bit fun as well. That's the motto is, how do you make something simple even more simple and even more simple? Because our industry is complex enough. And there's so many administration tasks that it's the last thing that somebody wants to do. So if we can make something automated, if we can templatize, if we can make it one button to create something, we will. And we've done that with BIM execution planning. So you can create from your templates, driven by what we call smart fields, a BIM execution plan that is a collaborative, live, online. It's a tool. I mean, you talk about collaboration. You can't really collaborate on a single document, maybe a PDF or a Word document that is maybe online, maybe available, but we break it down into smaller bite-sized pieces, units of thought that can be agreed to. And you go through a continuously approving process rather than it being, I wait until the last minute, I send my BIM execution plan as a PDF and expect everyone to agree to it when it's probably not likely that it's going to happen. So,
and a lot of these, and Brian would probably weigh in on this as well, a lot of these documentation that we're talking about are very tedious, and none of us want to do them,
right?
But they're part of the contract and the contractual language and how it goes together. And I think in the U.S., and you can weigh in on this, we have a hard issue with where the model is a contract document versus the drawings. I want to kind of dive into that, because all day today, coming from all different backgrounds and all different countries, a lot of them, the model is part of their contract. But in the U.S., it's not the case.
Well, yet. I think even before that, one of the things I think that's important that Clive mentioned in his application, it's live.
Yes.
It's accessible and it's live for people to communicate about. It's a document that has to evolve. A lot of times, I mean, even, in the U.S., we talk about design, bid, build, CM at risk, design, build. But if it's a design, bid, build project, you can't call it done when the architect publishes a document that somebody may have not even read. But I think that's really the value there. Their application to have this visual tool that, as you said, makes it fun. It's live. It can evolve. It's accessible to everybody. They can see it and communicate about it. That's really important, because a lot of times it's a stack of paper that gets done, gets thrown down in a meeting once, or gets emailed out and is never resurrected at that point.
Yeah.
And you talk about being contract, and it's not just the contract, but the BIM execution plan, is it part of the contract? In the US, it's much more difficult. Yeah. A lot of the other countries are actually doing that. Yes. So,
and they have standards that are built in.
And have standards, yeah. And it's part of the bidding process as well.
Yes.
We are improving that in the US as well. There is a lot of work done. The concept of a pre-contract and a post-contract or a contract BIM execution plan, the concept of it being a live document and continually improving and evolving, it doesn't, those sorts of things, it's difficult to nail down and make it a contract agreement. But yeah, so how do you get the best of both worlds? How do you make it a live, living, breathing document and a PDF that is contracted and signed? Yeah.
Yeah, because we're stuck where, and we talked about this in my presentation, that 2D documents are your deliverable, right? So how do you get a design professional to do more than what their contracted deliverable is to pay forward to a builder who's going to come in after the fact? And it's, you know, not trying to, you know, defend one or the other there, but it's difficult, right? Times are crunched, schedules are crunched, and wait a minute, now I have, the model has to do this. I was just doing it to produce contract documents. So, you know, Cody, if you're coming in, yeah, you know, the thing that, you know, that we talked about, or, you know, there was a slide up that said, you know, when you're coming in after the fact, what's the first thing that the builder asks for? The model.
Yep.
And the response is typically, well, it wasn't part of my deliverables to the owner.
Yeah.
And then the back and forth and the song and dance starts. So,
or it's not to the level of development that it needs to be to actually coordinate.
Yeah, because the drawings have been, you know, broken down and, you know, probably bastardized to produce the 2D that needs to come out, because that was a deliverable. That, and, you know, in the architect or engineer's defense, that was their deliverable. That's what they had to focus on.
Yeah.
That was something that, you know, produced part of it or became a foundation of the model, but there's things that might not be consistent. And if you're doing, you know, coordination on it, hopefully the drawings and major geometric things haven't moved and evolved, but there's things that are, you know, notes, and there's always going to be notes and things that we have to do. So it's a big challenge. It's a, you know, I think project delivery plays into that. Risk management plays into that. You know, understanding what the owner's expectations are. Different owners who have standards in place. And I'm sure there's plenty in Clive's application that, you know, the foundations there are templates there. But I know we've worked with owners in my past role that set up those expectations. And there's a clear understanding when the RFP language goes out or the RFQ language out, you will follow our organization X's standards, and it outlines that model is intended to be collaborated on.
Right.
And it's not an all or nothing. It's not a everything. And I think that's part of the conversation that we need to get to. What can we rely upon in a model? It doesn't have to be everything. It doesn't have to be the contract document or the final deliverable, but it should be an accompanying document to the paper that's there.
Yeah. I love the, you mentioned, you know, about, we see it all the time where the architect says, this is the model, and the contract says, okay, I get it, but I've already done this as the model because I can't trust this. And is it part of my, am I standing by this? And this is part of the contract. And you end up with multiple models, and the coordination teams are going to. And so I love the phrase, the quote from Mark Sawyer, one of our CEOs back at in the Vico days. He said, why use one model when five will do? And it's like the concept of having this waste in our industry, and we're okay with it because of the contractual obligation isn't there. Mm-hmm. And it, but if it was there, if we were defining the requirements clearly enough and it was contracted and then the model was delivered to those requirements, it could be trusted and everyone would get the green light. Obviously, that's where we would say use verify inside of Planoly to make that easier. But knowing what you get and being able to trust that means that you don't have to rework and do modeling yourself. Yeah.
I stole that line. I use it all the time after I heard you do it. Why, you know, with the light fixture, right? You know, why have one light fixture when four or five will do? Because and it's true. And, you know, that was, I've experienced those pains and you don't think about it, but that's an opportunity where having a collaborative project team that sits down and not only has a BIM execution plan, but really goes through the LOD planning effort to say who's going to model what when. And I think that's one of the biggest things that can create the needed reliability that we can, you know, plan around on a project, because we don't need somebody having, we said the architect has a light, the interior designer has a light, the electrical engineer has a light, the electrical contractor has a light. Well, which one's right?
Yeah, you know, duplicates everywhere.
So what are you going to rely upon, right? Yeah. There's four of them. and who's doing what. And that was all wasted time.
Yeah. I had one on just a project just recently. Like, it was kind of a conversation because every part of it, they had a point. They were part of a decision, but it was not one combined decision.
Mm-hmm.
And so what do you want us to build?
Yep.
Yeah. And I think lighting is actually one of the most complicated now. It's getting more and more and more because now the lights are not just for light. They're becoming an architectural piece of the project,
yeah.
Much further than they've ever had before.
I worked for an owner that was so so anal about the lighting alignment that they would want to be part of that decision-making process.
No doubt.
Great.
You're going to see it.
But then they weren't engineering savvy enough to be able to know how many or how large. But so then that would conflict with the actual layout that was needed. And then a big challenge because the owner had made a decision, we want them here in this line, and it just doesn't work. And so that iteration and bringing people in early, collaborative project delivery, that's the way to solve these problems.
Yeah.
Bring the right person in to help make that decision early. And that's an early planning. How do you do that? How do you make sure that it's difficult because are they contracted at the same time, at the right time? And yeah. And what you want to do is in a traditional workflow, have that IPD type approach by bringing in consultative rather than contracting them for the rest of the job.
That's a great lead into the next conversation, which is these delivery types, right? Design, bid, build went away in a lot of regards. It's still dying a slow death in the U.S., but design, build has taken hold. I wonder, Brian, the thing that we might see in the future is taking the pros of what design, build provides in that contract delivery, because I see them at risk is really hurt. I mean, I talk to so many GCs all the time, including us and our contracts. And we just feel like at this point, if we're really going to get anywhere, we've got to take the pros and solve the cons of design build, whether that's IPD or what it is. That's what we're trying to solve.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we talk about at DBI all the time is we had a market report with FMI, and they're targeting in 2021, I think it was 42% of project delivery in the U.S. was design build.
Yep.
And then there was another 5% growth that they were looking towards in 2025. And they're on track. They just did a midterm review of that and we're on track to hit that market. So we've seen the biggest growth in design build, still a little bit in CM at risk. And then definitely the decline of design bid build.
Yeah.
It's just too long of a delivery.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of the old way, right? That's the evolution. We seem at risk where there's this kind of implied collaboration, which happens sometimes.
Right.
But sometimes it doesn't. There's still that finger pointing, but
there's massive risk.
Yeah. And you're being able to transition from three parties and two contracts to two parties and one contract.
Right.
And it's to the design builder, and everybody else under there understands the
dynamics playing up.
The responsibilities and accountability of the team, because we all have the same goal in mind now. It's a project, not my piece of work for somebody else's piece of work.
Yeah. And then this leads into this conversation. Did you have a point on that?
Well, just optimizing for the whole rather than for the individual companies.
Yeah.
And that's because optimizing for individual companies tends to cause more waste in between the handoffs. And that's what causes our industry the bad rep and the fact that we've got wasted time and labor materials. Everything is just waste. We're the largest industry on spend and the largest contributor to CO2, et cetera. So it's like, how do you optimize that? You optimize it for the project.
Yes.
And you can only do that if you're talking together with the right minds, collaborative, early, getting everyone in agreement, rather than just trying to get what you want in a contract and then beat people over the head when it's too late.
Yeah. And talking about those phases, this is another great example for both of you, is that as the model progresses, and let's say it gets to the point where it becomes a supplement to the drawings like it is here in Europe, it's dynamic and now it's collaborative. So how do you say, this is SD, this is DD, this is CD, this is now ready to bid? Because if it's truly dynamic, it never stops. And so you could be designing throughout the process with real live deadlines as part of the contract.
Yeah, there were some projects that I've worked on in the past. I've been fortunate to work on some really great projects. And we, I think what what the big difference is you just have to change people's perspective and, you know, allow the process to be fluid. I think one of the biggest things I've seen, we were talking about electrical fixtures, but I think more of, you know, plumbing and piping, fire suppression, mechanical systems, where the design engineer routes every piece of pipe and ductwork and conduit, and it never goes there, right?
Right.
It's basically a start over for people. So,
and they say it's their intent.
Yeah, well, now you're talking about design intent, but if we really look at design intent, we're talking about performance,
right.
System specification, energy consumption, the qualitative and quantitative aspects of what's there, not the technicality of the means and methods of how getting from point A to point B is. I'm not an engineer, but I would beg to guess they would much rather be figuring out the calculations and the performance,
yes,
than routing ductwork and making sure they weren't hitting something else in the system.
Of course.
But what do the trade partners know? They know the most efficient way to get from point A to point B. They know how to optimize the materiality that they're using.
And why aren't they at the table during design?
The cost, get all that, to bring that expertise in. And that's when we had design build projects, really had to blur the lines on what a deliverable package was, maybe not even to SD and CD, but I think just what was a deliverable and understanding what did you need to get your building permit, your code review, AHJ review, but not waste the time of the engineer doing the routing and the systems, but allow the person who's going to do it provide that insight, get those people in the room together, figure it out, and do it once.
Yeah.
And that's where it's heading to, back to you about level of detail and level of development.
And
you got a
level of information need and all the rest of it. Yeah. We had a phrase, design to build, build to design.
Yep.
The principle of the fact that if you do it once and the right person is designing it, then it should be built to that design. You should get the right person to design it in the optimum way so that you can actually build it in the same way. When you talk about SDDD, CD, et cetera, and these are wasteful, traditional, archaic, expectations. It's the opposite of lean. It's building up so many decisions in such a long period of time.
Yep.
And unfortunately, that causes so much waste between those phases. So much of everything is built based on that, the payment processing, et cetera. So we've focused, and I've had the wonderful opportunity to put in place what we termed this model progression, this concept of smaller bite-sized pieces and a stage-based delivery. So instead of just big, long phases, it was actually broken down into 21 different stages. And the optimal elements were put in the model by the right people at the right time. So
right.
You could start the trade that was doing the original light placement, but also bringing the engineering mindset so that they're put in the right place at the right time. And that principle of breaking it down into smaller chunks is so opposite from what we do in our industry. We summarize, we hide behind confusion, and we're much more okay with that because it doesn't come out that we're wrong. We're never wrong if everything is just summarized to one number or 6 months worth of work.
Well, and I think part of that, you were talking about that planning effort and billing, but even one step back from that, that's how we plan our time. It's not about that holistic approach. You know, people schedule staff and fees for those deliverables based, I need this many drawings by this much time. That's the workloading effort, right? It's not about how developed the design is or the constructability or the coordination of the design. It's based on, I got to produce a sheet.
What happens though with in the US with AIA, and they say, you know, this is the stuff that needs to be completed by a certain stage. There is some restrictions on that, but I don't think it's to the extreme as others are.
AIA sets forth, it's a guideline, right?
Right.
But they have the traditional billing metrics or percentages are hold pretty true, and that's what people work around. But again, I think that's based on drawing production. Okay, at SD, we need to have two sheets of plan. We need to have a floor plan for everything, and we need to have building elevations and building sections. Okay, that's X amount of sheets.
Yeah.
And I know what goes on that, and I know how long that roughly takes to produce. But we're not thinking about how long does it take to understand the building envelope?
Right.
How long does it take to understand the interior planning and adjacencies of what we're doing?
Of the project.
Yeah, it's just that's another one of those different mindsets that, you know, hasn't impacted that portion of the work yet.
Do you see a lot of the building envelope starting to be modeled out and put into a BIM execution plan?
Because I, well, as far as specification, oh, yeah, no, this doubt. Is how much we want. It depends. Like, I hate the answer, but yeah. It depends. And we see more and more owners requesting, can you do this as part of my workflow? And unfortunately, that's not always ending up in a good outcome. How do you define, and there's, we mentioned the LOD and level of information need and, you know, that concept of, is it development detail, definition? Wow, that's a, you know, really interesting conversation. But how do you define what your requirements are? Like, what are you looking for? And it's a set of information that is, unfortunately, there's multiple customers that need each one of those pieces of information.
Right.
And to define it at the use the word detail, but not in the same respect, to define it in the detail that you need to be able to follow it and check it, it is excruciatingly difficult to do that. So we don't do it.
Right.
Yeah. And when we don't do it, then nobody's wrong. And so that just keeps on going round and round, project by project. So we as an industry, we need to be able to define requirements much more clearly, remove the ambiguity, and actually see whether we did or didn't do it. Did we do more than it? Maybe next year on the next project, we need to include more requirements, different requirements that we had before. So this learning loop needs to happen that we as an industry don't do a very good job of.
And on the level of development, level of detail, what's your opinions on where that conversation's going?
Well, I'll say level of development because I'm focused in the U.S. So,
of course, yeah.
So we'll say level of development for the sake of argument there. But I think it's, I always, you know, one of my interests was, you know, how do all these conversations roll up to project management and the planning of our work? And I think, you know, somebody who was on the level of development committee with BIM Forum in the past, you know, really understanding how that applies is extremely beneficial. And having somebody who is savvy in that conversation, being able to communicate, be part of early project meetings is key. You know, not having, you know, just somebody come in and say, oh, we're going to write the BIM execution plan and hopefully I can get somebody to fill out. Yeah. Yeah. Copy paste, change project name and project number. But really use that as a way to understand. I've being able to see conversations where somebody's talking about, okay, we need an early steel package to come out to here. And then, okay, well, who's going to deliver this? What else do you need figured out? And, you know, being there, being able to say, okay, well, this has to come first. This has to come first. This has to come first.
Right.
It impacts a team. It's not just a technology conversation. You're able to, you know, have a much more engaged discussion about bringing value.
And it's contractual. In a lot of ways, like it goes to the heart of what we're trying to do with the delivery.
And I've seen the pains of LOD, right? When, you know, my previous job, you know, we was able to work with our legal team, fantastic opportunity to work with our legal team and really go through and understand a lot of the impacts, educate them on why it was important, but also understand why they had angst and from a, you know, risk avoidance perspective, but, you know, really create a balance. The next part of that was saying, hey, these are the things we need to do. Getting to a project manager at the beginning of a project, I don't have time to fill that out. Mm-hmm. Or we don't have time to fill that out. We don't know everything it's going to happen on the project. It's like, well, yeah, of course you don't. This is part of figuring that out.
And full process.
It was a really difficult give and take of seeing where there was value, but then also being hesitant to do it.
Yeah.
So it's a tough dynamic at the early outset. But when you do it, it's extremely valuable because you can plan out your work.
It's okay not to know as well. That's the problem is that we plug for Planoly, right? We are trying to make early planning. Yeah. Don't plan late, plan early with Planoly. The principle is that it's so difficult. It's administration heavy. It's the last thing that we want to do.
It's just tedious.
We are, especially when it comes to BIM, how cool would it be just to start modeling this shit and spin it around on the screen? And how much better would that be?
Yeah, well, and go a step further, all the way from the design down to the contractor, down to the subs, and then ultimately to the owner, you can gain information out of it. So like the specifications, instead of it like creating this big book that's the narrative of the drawings, you click on something, you create it, it automatically starts to create some of that specifications that nobody really wants to write. I feel like it's one of the most tedious jobs, and it ends up being a doorstop behind somebody's door, this big, gigantic narrative of what we're supposed to do. But like,
that's the same as some of the standards as well, unfortunately.
Of course, yeah, because you get to a point and the job progresses, it gets out of hand, it starts speeding up, and then everybody forgets everything in between of what happened to get there. But the specifications and everything that are tied to these different documents, why can't they be ultimately linked to that model? Because ultimately, if we want to get past some of this tediousness that we still need, it's still contractually required that it's how we write scopes of work. It's how we do these types of things in the GC world. We have to have a common way to be able to do that in a better way.
Well, I think it's, you know, even taking it one step beyond that, you're not talking about, you know, from a specification standpoint for the builder, but now you're also talking about for the turnover of the owner.
Yes.
So it's a continued growth of that information. And owners that have those requirements, these are the maintainable assets in my facility that I need to understand about. So now you have a third step.
Yeah.
You know, your second step. So you're conveying your specifications.
Yep.
The contractor and the builder and the trades need to understand that, but then they need to add information for when was that installed? When was it commissioned? When was it turned on? When's the end of warranty?
To truly get to the point, which is for some owners, and not all yet, because they just haven't bought onto it, is the idea of being able to run their facility the right way.
Well, and I don't think that's going to be for all owners.
I know, no, it isn't.
Right, and like different project delivery models apply to different scenarios. Yep. But in my career, I was always focused on healthcare and higher ed. And those are the two markets. And those are the ones who are really ripe to see the value in all of these opportunities. They're building, renovating, building, demolishing, renovating.
Yep. Their life cycles are much larger than some of the standard buildings' life cycles.
And they have people able to manage the information too. It's not just, hey, we have this one building and we're going to do this, or it's being leased out, or you know, somebody's not building something to turn it over and get rid of it, and they're not worried about life cycle costs, just first cost kind of thing. So there's so many different dynamics, but those market segments really see value there and the ones who can take advantage of it.
The teams that care about more than just this project, it's the next project. Like, you don't get many owners like that. And unfortunately, we put owners in the same box. And the owner that says, I want a building, and my purpose is not to build another 7 of these. Right. My purpose is to get value from that building. And maybe I'm a casino operator and I want it open so quickly. And so the contractor says, well, we'll do BIM on that to make it much more certain and much easier for you to open on time. But usually it's just a sales pitch rather than it being, yes, this is truly going to be optimizing the workflow and delivering more certainty. And so the owner says, well, what else could you do with BIM? Because I've just read up online and wow, there's so many things that we could do with this. So you could give me this delivery model and digital twin with all of the warranty information, but they're not ready for using it. They're not actually set up. Their business model doesn't actually care about that. They care about people coming through, staying in the casino. They're more about, you know, the walk, the path through. That's the sort of thing they care about. That's why you should use BIM to do visualization and, you know, walkthroughs, fly-throughs, that sort of thing, rather than, you know, a delivery of a data heavy model at the end of it. Yeah.
One of the things that I wanted to bring up in that conversation is this whole discussion that the US is having about constructive bill reviews. I feel like every other month we talk about this in North Carolina, that the GCs are supposed to lead that process. But there's a real downfall at this point where we're not upholding our end of the bargain. And I don't know if that's because the experience of the industry is starting to leave, and the younger generation that's coming in does not have the proper, experience to just look at drawings and understand how things are coming together. And I want to get this thought from both of you. Is it one of the ideas that we have as an industry is, does a younger generation look for completeness and they start to learn what makes a system complete, the building as a whole? And then as they, you know, mature in the industry, they are fundamentally watching the older generations that have been around the projects understand how to break down the drawings that they're looking at and see the challenges ahead. Because right now, it's under the impression that all the younger generation believes we can look at the model and solve every problem. Like, as soon as you look at the model, you can solve it. But then the first time that you like talk to them about, well, how would you solve it? Just they put their hands up because at the end of the day, they're looking for an answer in the back of the book. And there is an answer in this industry. There's right and there's wrong. And I think that's a big conversation that's going on.
Okay, what a great question. But maybe I'll answer it with saying my personal experience, I was a contractor first and I wouldn't be as capable, I know, in my BIM roles if I hadn't spent that time getting my boots dirty and ripping my jeans on rebar on the site. Like that's
never changed in the industry. It's just embedded into it.
So if you can combine those two things together, that's where magic happens. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I was first in the US in San Francisco, we were on a job site with a contractor and I was so surprised. This was years ago as well, but this was 15 years ago. Okay. So take that into context that the foreman on the construction site for the GC said, I don't know, but you can ask this guy. He's my right-hand man. He's the BIM guy. Right. And I thought, oh, wow, this is a great place to be because there is this reliance, but actually it's the only time I've ever had that happen. So combining the foreman's experience with the BIM guy's experience was where something really magical happened. But you have people that don't have project experience trying to implement BIM. It becomes difficult. You have it also vice versa, which is also difficult. So how do you get the best of all of that? Good luck. Like as in, you know, and people are doing it. It's about education, training, commitment to mindset, really adaptation from where you are today. And our industry is very traditional, very reluctant to change, doesn't run towards the technology. So all of that, it's a people thing. It's a psychological thing. How do you change that? I think that construction teams should actually have some psychological team, you know, as in on board, because there was a company, Webcore in the US as well. They actually had a psychologist on their staff. And it was incredible because the psychologist actually implemented a bonusing system within the team that was actually tied to performance that the team members agreed to and everything was improving. So that sort of thing is not really where we usually go. Okay. So to answer the question, I have no idea, but it's a complex topic. Yeah.
I think that's an interesting approach. One of the things that we had was incentivized project teams that, you know, design and construction contingencies were available for distribution based on your percent of work, based on performance, right? So there's a carrot out there to, hey, if I exceed, I get something back, right? So there's a risk reward sort of scenario there. So you are incentivized to collaborate. I think one of the challenges, you know, the talking about modeling and, you know, the different, you know, discrepancy of people coming in, they don't understand how a building goes together. So there is an idea of the model could become, you know, this nirvana of the model becoming everything, but there's still always going to be things that are qualitative and performance based that need to be written down and annotated.
Right.
There's details that just aren't going to be able to be represented in a model. And I think that goes back to the, where can we put reliability? Where are the low hanging fruit things that we can put reliability on the model and, you know, minimize the amount of documentation we have to the things that can't be represented in the model and allow those to be companion documents. That's where I think that we'll flourish. And I think new architects, engineers, builders coming in, that's the one thing that they miss because they are so savvy in the tools that they can go right into that. But that may be one of the things that's missing from that experience. And, you know, the other side, coming from a large AE firm, you only have the opportunity to know what you didn't do right on your project.
Right.
And, you know, we had 1,000+ people and there were mistakes all over the place, but it's really hard to convey that. You know, you have a multi-city or multi-country organization. How do you communicate all that? That communication is hard. So we talk about people, process, technology. It's people, right? How do you communicate And it's not for a failure of trying. It's just difficult.
It is.
How do you get those lessons learned out to people so they can progress and become better and evolve?
I think that's another one of the pieces. It's not just the lessons learned to a younger generation. It's in the GC world, it's taking the lessons learned that each of the projects have gone through. And why can't that be delivered to the other projects? It might not exactly align with that project, but you would say, like, this is something you probably should have to look at going forward.
Failure.
We just keep making the same decisions, and it's just a loop like this.
Yeah. Yeah. We don't embrace failure with the concept of it being a lesson that we can learn.
Yes.
We embrace failure as failure. It's bad. It's cost. It causes problems, and we don't want to do it.
Right.
There's, you know, from a technology perspective, you want to fail, and you want to fail fast. Yeah. What's the book and all the rest? The principle is, like, if I can learn from that and never do it again,
right,
how wonderful would my next project, my next... But because we have project teams that come together for a project, and however much we fail, and we want to bury it because it will make us look bad, and it doesn't matter at the end of the day because we're going to go on to another project and start up again with another team, completely disbanded from the original team. The lessons that we learned might have been a perfect situation for us to develop camaraderie and et cetera, but it just stops and then starts again on the next project. So how can you do that? How can you do that? Especially when we don't define enough detailed task requirements and track it in such a way that it can be learned from. That's what we're trying to fix. I think there's a huge part of, you know, we talk about how do you get something done and desire to do something, the psychology behind it and gamification. But why does somebody do something? They either really intrinsically, they just love it and want to do it, or it's in the contract, or it's tied to payment. And so, unfortunately, not everyone wants to do work. Yeah, it's not like let's go and do this hard stuff. So intrinsically, them wanting to do something is difficult. In the contract, well, it doesn't matter until the end of the day, until we then pull out the contract and find out what it was because somebody's complaining about something. And then payment is so far away from you doing a task that it becomes so difficult to tie those two things together. So today I presented on this concept of micropayments. Mm. And how about, rather than me doing a task, waiting to the end of the month, creating an invoice, and then in 60 days getting paid for what I did. How about if, as soon as I've done that task and you check the box, I get a micro payment for that transaction directly from their bank account to my bank account in a secure way? It will create liquidity in definition of what I need, requirements, and also people completing tasks when they said they were going to, because they would get paid for what they've done.
Yeah, and that's a huge question in the industry. I think one of the things, you know, post-COVID, the pandemic, especially in construction, but it's even more so in the rest of the industry, you know, does the U.S. go to a four-day work week and go for 4-10s? I mean, that's a huge question that's been asked for years. Because are we more productive if we go down that road?
I don't know. I can remember at a previous job, we did the... you know, 4-9s and a half day, and
yep,
was there all day Friday.
So yeah,
it didn't matter. It didn't matter.
Yeah.
I think I want to
be performance based.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Cause I mean, there's not many, that work a 40 hour week in this industry. It's too complex. It's too many different variables. There's too many decisions that have to be made.
Well, and there's always a fire to put out.
The
decision, if it doesn't get made, prolongs things, which is, you know, time and money and the whole thing. But I think one of the things that made me think of that Clive started saying in response to the, you know, the kind of knowledge retention that we talk about. You think about our project teams. We might have had the greatest project team that you worked with ever. The project's done. Everybody scatters.
Yep.
Right.
We put a new team on the next one.
The new team. Yeah. That you get reassembled, and you might have been late coming off of one project going to another. So that makeup is really hard, because those synergies that you build, and I know, you know, Clive's in the morning and I can reach out to him and get an answer, and so and so is going to be here later. And Clive works this way, Cody works this way. If I send you a text versus sending an email or something,
right,
you have all these little nuances that you
learn that every time you go through that same process.
Not only internally, only on your team, but externally with your teams. And it's really hard to maintain that synergy as you move forward.
Yeah.
Let alone all the knowledge that you gained on it and get it from other teams.
So that's one of the questions I was going to ask you. And then I got one more for Clive to kind of end us off. Is the stigmas between design and construction. There is a ton of just animosity between the sets. And I feel like out of all of it, design build does it the best way because there is a direct contract between the two. But Team at Risk or design bid build or any of these contracts that are not based upon the two coming together and then to the client, it's just too adversarial anymore. It's just so much risk on both sides, yeah. And it's just push and blame every which way you can do before we even get going.
That's our industry.
It is. I mean, at some point,
that's how people get paid.
At the end of the day,
order.
We just can't get to a situation where it's so blaming everybody that we can't move forward on anything.
I think one of the great experience that I had transition jobs, went to a company that was a little E, but also had a construction management group. We called it design-led, design-build. And the approach that we had, the architects, the engineers, and the builder sitting together on a team, performing as one for the owner was fascinating. And I can always remember, my boss, he had the project architect to come in and said, so-and-so's making me do this on the project. He's like, so do it. And he's like, well, I got to get this done. He's like, wait a minute, take a step back. You're complaining about spending, an hour to save 40 hours. You're complaining about, having to, lose a nickel to pick up a quarter kind of thing. And it
happens
was
every day in this industry.
It was this whole mentality of like, hey, we are a team.
Yes.
Our paychecks come from all the same people.
Yes.
You're helping your teammate. It might not be the one little thing that you're focused on right now, but you're doing this. And that relationship that we had on that project and those synergies that were built of having that integrated firm approach was really valuable. And I think that's an opportunity that I think we should be seeing more of. And there's a lot of big firms out there that have that and do that and can perform either side, whether you're the construction manager, the design builder, or you're just the architect or the engineer. But that's a real big opportunity to have that repetitious team perform and also have your external consultants in building that. I think that's an opportunity for design build as well, because you can come in and say, hey, I work really well with Clive. And if we had Cody's company on the team, wow, the three of us, we're gonna knock it out of the park. Right? We can really do this because we understand how to work together.
And it gets rid of those stigmas.
And those relationships are already there, yeah. Exactly. And even more so, trust.
Exactly, yeah, because you're in it together. You're contractually bounded together. So you win or lose together.
Yeah.
Versus, I'm over here. I'm with the contractor says I'm over here with my subs. I'm not going to talk to you. I'm going to talk to the client.
Yep.
And the client, he goes back to the client, then the client goes back to the design team. And the design team's like, I have a contract with you, not with the contractor. There's an indirect relationship, but don't talk to me about this.
And that whole trail is just waste, as you were saying before.
Well, then you these are lean concepts. And
yep.
I remember being on a site in San Diego it was a foreman being asked by somebody, it was one of the subcontractors' foreman being asked by the main contractor, what do you think? We were in a lean kind of pool planning kind of feel, and it was the first time that he'd been involved in anything like that. And his response to that question, what do you think? Because the question was being asked because he was the right person with the knowledge to give you the right answer. But for 40 years, he'd never been asked that question. And his response was, what do you want? Like, as in, this feels wrong. I've never in the 40 years been asked what I think about this specific thing. But if you want to know, it's and it was gold. It was the exact thing and it was the realization of for 40 years, he's been holding on to that type of information because of that collaboration's not been there. And the contractual nature of everything has been stunting it and preventing it.
And then, on the information side, whether it's the specifications, whether it's the level of development, whether it's, whether it's the types of materials or products, how do you manage, what's the best way for information management to flow through? I mean, it's a huge question now, because is it led by a client that has the standards? Is it led by the design team that has created the intent? Let's talk to a bunch of vendors trying to sell them every which way, trying to get this product.
Or the, is it the BIM consultant that has a view?
What is that?
We love BIM consultants,
of course. And how to consult like a particular part of the process, but not the whole process as a whole.